Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Porter was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school,
know about
pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education gadfly.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who's never been included as a part of the civil rights community, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. Wait a minute. That's not such a good thing, is it?
Well, my reference is to the fact that Al Sharpton has joined hands with Joel Klein and a number of other prominent education reform types to promote, education reform. And the question is this a good thing to bring Al Sharpton into the middle of the education reform debate?
Right. You know, I mean, there's two schools of thought here, right? One is, strange bedfellows are always wonderful and neat. I'm not a big fan of that school of thought. I think the notion that, you know, hard-charging and responsible ed reformers who know their business really want to invite Al Sharpton in the front door to start waiting around and having the spotlight in terms of education reform is probably a substantial mistake. You know what strikes me is probably the most effective thing that Bill Buckley did in his, you know, half decade in the conservative movement was when he read out the John Birchers out of the conservative movement in the 60s, saying, look, you know, it matters that we have people who are in this not just because they happen to be on the right side of the issue, but they're on the right side of the issue for reasons that are coherent and make sense and are consistent with good policy.
So, Rick, what's the strangest bedfellow you've ever had?
Hey, that was kind of a double entendre, baby. I like it when you play that game.
All right. We got a lot to cover here today. Of course, Kobe.
Nice.
Only 4 seconds late. Well done. You know, Kobe's been on vacation. He's a little rusty. He was out in Las Vegas playing some poker.
Vegas, baby.
He won some money.
You did? He came out up, Kobe.
Oh, that's too bad. All right, well, we got a lot to cover. Pardon the gadfly. He seems fine now. I don't know.
Dude. Yo, empathy, Mike.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. And then we got some education news of the weird. Before that, we got outrage of the week. We got lots going on. Christina, get us started.
Thank you. Topic one, Eleanor Holmes Norton represents Washington, D.C. in Congress. She's giddy because it looks like the Democrat-controlled Congress will kill D.C.'s Opportunity Scholarship Program, which allows poor kids to attend private schools. Holmes Norton says she wants to destroy this program in order to protect children. Does that make sense?
Is that the actual quote?
Well, all right. Look, a lot of the school choice crowd, including some of our own colleagues here, have been having a field day with this because her quote was something to the effect of, we have to protect the children in this. And people are saying, what, you protect the children by taking away their voucher to go to a private school? I actually think that's a little unfair. I think what she was implying, perhaps, is that regardless of the political debate, we have to protect the children that are currently in the program. I mean, I think what's going to happen, even if they kill the program, is they're going to have some kind of grandfather clause that says that the kids in the program get to serve out their time in private schools. But, you know, Kobe and Lam are shaking their heads. They're doubtful.
You know, I mean, more fundamentally for me, this just points to, you know, the problem with us having not thought very much about markets and education is right now the justification for the D.C. voucher program is that it helps, you know, this number, 1,900 kids, whatever the number this year, get into schools where they're probably better served than they would be. And that's laudable, and I think it's silly to kill it. But, there's hardly evidence that the existence of these programs is having a positive ripple effect on these larger systems, or that we're seeing much evidence that the private sector is getting better in response to these opportunities. I think if we thought about these issues, if we factored into them, if those of us in the reform community were working on this, these programs would be stronger politically and it would be easier to justify them in the public arena.
Well, I don't know. I think they might be stronger politically because there is, you know, you can clearly say they're not having any kind of impact on the public school system. I mean, it's when they start to have an impact on the public school system that gets politically dicey.
Well, it depends what kind of impact.
Well, and I should say, though, that your girlfriend, Michelle Rhee, has been very strong in her support for this program, saying that as a parent, she would never take away another parent's choice.
No. I mean, she's one of the few superintendents who's actually gone out of her way to take that stance. And that's pretty impressive of her.
I notice you don't even deny anymore that she's your girlfriend.
Well, Jolene, you know, listens to the podcast and doesn't seem to have any problems with it. So, you know, the way things shake out.
Hmm. OK, Okay, moving on. Next one. LA's teachers walked out of class this week to protest education cuts made by the state legislature. AJ Duffy, LA's union boss, said that any teacher who didn't leave class would be crossing a picket line. Rick, should LA's teachers be commended for their political demonstration during school hours?
No. You know, the analogy here is that if police decide that they're disgruntled about what's happening in the state legislature, that they decide that one or two guys are going to patrol downtown L.A. and the rest of them are going to go picket. You know, teachers are supposed to be there educating the kids. Mm-hmm. If having a couple teachers on babysitting duty keeps the kids from getting in trouble, that is far from an adequate, you know, response to the fact that teachers who should be in the classrooms, who are earning paychecks to teach kids, are choosing of their own volition to walk out on their responsibilities and deprive kids of class time in order to make a statement about something that the elected representatives in Sacramento were doing.
Yeah, and yet how different is this from what happens in many places all over the country? The report that you and Kobe did on collective bargaining agreements showed that in many collective bargaining agreements, teachers have the right to leave class time to participate in union activities. Which seems to me, again, crazy. I mean, the principle should be that, you know, class time is sacred. We want teachers there in class teaching students.
Yeah,
I mean,
let's make this stuff
after school.
Let's make a distinction here. That's right. I have no problem with teachers protesting what the legislature is doing or school board policy outside of school hours. Mm-hmm. If teachers want to show up and picket, that's absolutely, you know, appropriate. The problem is when they are trying to deprive kids of instructional time in order to make political points.
Said. Last one. Pennsylvania's Senate Education Committee recently shut down a proposal by the state's Board of Education to require high school exit exams starting with the class of 2014. They think such exams will cause a lot of kids to drop out. Is that a valid concern?
Well, you know, I think the research is a little bit mixed on this front. I mean, there have been some studies that have argued that that high school exit exams do lead some kids to drop out. But at the same time, there's a lot of evidence that seems to indicate that most kids drop out because they're bored to death in schools and they're not getting challenged adequately. And so the whole idea here is, can we make sure that there's some, you know, floor below which, you know, there are some standards kids are getting challenged? I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, one point is that certainly some of the comparative research by John Bishop up at Cornell or Ludger Wussmann in Germany suggests that there's systemic.
Who is that?
Ludger Wussmann.
That was well said.
Thank you, baby. Our buddy Marty's frequent co-author.
Yes.
Marty West's frequent co-author. But you know, I mean, their work suggests that, look, when you look internationally at comparisons, nations that have clear expectations in terms of graduation, you seem to see real benefits in terms of student engagement, in terms of student graduation, and in terms of student performance. So it's partly a short-term versus a long-term issue. Mm-hmm. Are we going to change expectations? The bigger problem here is that none of us actually have the guts. We want to talk about accountability. We want to talk about making sure kids know things. Mm-hmm. But none of us in the American ed reform circles apparently have the guts to say to mean these things when we say them. So in one state after another, when you start to see these intimidating numbers come off the assembly line, what we see is legislators and boards of education backing down and compromising standards.
But Pennsylvania was special because it was preemptive. I mean, they haven't even created a test yet.
Well, they only had 6 years. I mean, you don't want to be crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, they you know, the state board of education wanted to embrace this, and now the legislature's acting. So.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that was some serious conversation and discussion we had there today.
I dig it, baby.
About the issues. Well, enough with that. It is now time for Jeff Kooner's Education Outrage of the Week. You know, Jeff, we only have a few more of these left until you leave us behind, go off to the big world of talk radio. So, Jeff, make this a good one.
You're right, Mike. The clock is definitely ticking, and, you know, I'm getting more depressed as June 27th approaches. I'm just, I'm so dreading having to leave Fordham.
I didn't want to say that, you know, but frankly, you don't look good, and it shows.
Hey, what happens on June 27th?
It's my last day.
Oh.
We announced that last week.
I know.
We announced that last week.
I just want to – never mind.
Well, you're right. There could be some listeners out there that are, you know
– don't necessarily listen every week.
Don't listen every week, right. I don't know why that would be the case, because you can listen 24/7, 7 days a week to the podcast.
Are you encouraging people to play the podcast over and over 24/7?
No, though you could, but I'm just saying that there's really no excuse to miss a podcast.
Really? None. And in fact, you can go back and listen to the whole podcast back catalog, can't you?
And I understand that some people even listen to the podcast while they're doing other things.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like reading blogs. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jeff. So what are you outraged about this week?
Mike, it's an absolutely outrageous story. First of all, I want to give kudos to Kathy Jeffcoats from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for writing this story. You know, Mike, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is, frankly, I think one of the worst papers in the country. but even a stop clock is right twice a day, and they finally got this one right. But anyway, this story is unbelievable.
Is she the best dead reporter in their newsroom? Or is...
Probably. Okay. I mean, probably. But this, Mike, this one's unbelievable. I want our listeners out there to remember this name. Travis Corey Hextall. This is the face of domestic terrorism in the United States, according to the people in Clayton County, Georgia. Here's what's happened, Mike. Last week, just before school ended, this poor guy, Hextall, is a 34-year-old biology teacher at Mount Zion High School. By all accounts, a very good teacher, does his job extremely well, mm-hmm. gave goodies to kids all year round. He went to the school administration and said he had a problem with a male student who was disruptive, who had disciplinary problems. He didn't ask the school administration. He begged them to get rid of this student. Please get him out of my classroom. They told him, he's your problem. Deal with it in the classroom. So what does this clown do, this student? 1 week before the end of school, in front of all the students, he gets up, insults the teacher, literally is using the F word, threatens him, tries to mock him. So what happens is poor Hextall, who's been in fear of his life, literally loses his mind. He goes crazy. And this is all being videotaped on a by the student's cell phones. Mm-hmm. He starts yelling and screaming. He tells this student that he's going to, quote unquote, rip his eyeballs out, that he will urinate on him and, quote unquote, kill his family. Oh. Then after he says this, I'm not making this up. It's in the story. After he says this, Hextall spits on the floor and apologizes to the student. Because I guess he figured he knew, he just probably kissed away his job. Well, lo and behold, there's a huge uproar. What do the geniuses in Clayton County do?
What do they do?
Do they just discipline the guy?
I doubt it.
No. He's arrested on disorderly conduct. And this one, this is the beauty. Terroristic threats charges. He committed literally an act of terrorism by telling this kid he's going to rip his eyeballs out. So this guy has
That's pretty hostile, I got to say. And he threatened to pee on him too. I mean, let's not forget.
You know, so this poor guy is now sitting in county jail.
Right.
He's lost his job. And not only has he lost his job, literally he's facing charges. He's going to go to prison. And so his family's like, we don't know what to do. We're gonna, you know, our poor kid is gonna end up going to prison for nothing. I mean, did he plant the bomb? Was he planning to plant the bomb? No.
Now, don't get me wrong, Mike.
He should have been fired. It's unacceptable conduct.
I'm glad he should have been fired.
But I mean, arrested on terroristic charges?
Okay, but good.
Have these people in Clayton County lost their mind?
So, look, Mike,
here's what I would do. He should be fired for the misconduct.
Yes. Okay.
The student should have been kicked out of school a long time ago. He doesn't belong there. The school authorities who punted on the issue, they should go. And the police chief, Jeff Turner, this good old boy, I don't know who he's trying to pander to, thinks he's catching Osama bin Laden or something. That guy should be fired as well. I mean, you're destroying this poor guy's life.
I mean, I really didn't think Jeff was going to go in this direction. I mean, he's been consistent in the past that any time a teacher attacks a student, he seems to think it's a bad thing. But this time he kind of turned it around on us. And I got to say, the
spitting on the ground was kind of anticlimactic. First, I'm going to rip your eyeballs out.
Right.
Then I'm going to threaten to urinate on you. And then I'm going to go after your family. And then he spit on the floor.
Yeah, that's hard to really
the spit on the floor
figure that out.
Seems of a different piece.
Yeah, I don't know how you make sense of that.
I don't know. I do have to say that, you know, when you originally gave Jeff the moment of outrage and you and Checker were concerned about the ways in which this might impact Fordham's scholarly credibility, I think a couple months into the Cooner experiment shows that you guys were clearly off base.
Yes.
I don't know what we were thinking. Of a piece.
Whew. Well, Liam, let me tell you that I am glad that you're here with us on the show today and to clean up after that mess. Whew. All right. Well, it is that time that we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
Mike, when Rock Hill school officials tell commencement crowds to hold their applause until the end, they mean it. Police arrested 7 people after they were accused of loud cheering during the high school graduation ceremonies.
Arrested.
6 people at Fort Mill High School's graduation were charged Saturday, and a 7th at the graduation for York Comprehensive High School was charged Friday with disorderly conduct, authorities said. Police said the 7 yelled after students' names were called. Quote, "I just thought they were going to escort me out," unquote. Jonathan Orr told the Herald Rock of Rock Hill, about 70 miles north of Columbia. "I had no idea they were going to put handcuffs on me and take me to jail." Rock Hill police began patrolling commencements several years ago at the request of school districts who complained of increasing disruption. Those attending commencements are told they can be prosecuted for bad behavior, and letters are sent home with students, said Rock Hill police spokesman Lieutenant Jerry Waldrop.
That was an awkwardly constructed sentence.
I mean, this is from the newspaper.
I hear you.
All the cases, except for one that includes a resisting arrest charge, will be handled in city court and are punishable by a maximum of 30 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. And that's Education News of the Weird.
Wow. I thought that I had heard that we're in the middle of a bit of a crime spree here in this country, that we got some really serious problems happening in many of our cities. And yet it seems like our police officers increasingly are taking it to themselves to arrest people who cheer at graduations and teachers who yell at their students. I mean, isn't this a little out of control?
You know, although my other reaction is generally people are pretty demonstrative and raucous at high school graduations and nothing gets said.
Right.
So I'm curious, we don't know if these folks were drunk or if they were screaming. Because right there's this whole thing where, you know, you've got a couple hundred kids graduating frequently, and there are kind of, you know, questions of propriety and just having some respect for one another.
Sure.
So how out of hand were these folks to actually incline the cops to do this? Mm-hmm. I'm curious.
And what would happen if you had a cowbell? Would that get a special kind of punishment? Would that be even worse?
That's a good question.
Because, you know, you see that at some high school graduations. Well, here on the Education Gadfly Show, we ask our live studio audience to, you know, keep their applause until the end. And we mean it, people. And we mean it. Come on. I got nothing for that.
You didn't really deserve much for that, baby. That was kind of flat.
That's why we got Kobe the editor. He can always do a little.
No. I think that zooming silence. Or is he going to sweeten that up? Couple of blows. It is hotter than the Dickens in here, isn't it?
It is. This is what we do for the cause of education policy. Okay. Oof. Well, thank you, Liam. You know, we are heading into the summer, which means a greater challenge in finding Education News of the Weird, but we know that you're up to it. Okay. That's all the time we have for this week. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.